It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome into episode 237 of the Sources Say Podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR Podcast Network. Sources Say Podcast is, as always, brought to you by our good friends at Justice Dental. Visit one of their two Lexington locations. That's on Wellington Way and Blazer Parkway. Dr. Thompson and Dr. Justice look forward to seeing you soon. I am your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be joined on the road, a current car ride road trip edition of the Sources Say Podcast with my guy, Stephen Peake, our trusty videographer and the most passionate Kentucky basketball fan personally I know for my money, here to break down a very, very frustrating loss down in Athens, Georgia, a 75-68 loss to the Georgia Bulldogs. Stephen, first off, I'm sorry that you have to talk on such a sad occasion. I like when you can come on and be positive and uplifting and passionate in a good way, but unfortunately that's not the reality of the situation right now. We are about halfway back home to Kentucky and not feeling any better about how things happened and how things unfolded down in Athens.
We're only halfway. Oh my gosh. It's a long drive. This is my first time to Athens. We didn't get to see the campus too much, but beautiful town. I'll go back. I'll go back actually probably in the fall for a football game. I did not want a 6.5-7 hour car ride home after a loss. That was really something I was not interested in.
Yeah, especially considering what this game meant, the stakes behind it. There was so much going into it, a must win, if you will. Kentucky had eight losses going into the game. Not a great resume, all things considered. One quad one win, quad four loss. You know, they beat the teams they were supposed to, but no super high quality wins. Really needed to close out the regular season on a high note, needed to secure some, a nice little run of wins. You didn't take care of business at home against Arkansas. That was going to be the one that could kind of give you a throwaway there to close out the regular season. You get run off the floor at home against Arkansas. Then this trip approaches and you go, all right, well, you got to win this one. And now you kind of got to steal one here in a couple games or, make sure you win this one and the trip down to Starkville to make up for the Arkansas loss. You fall in both of them. And now we're at this point of the season where you're now 16-9, 7-5 in the SEC. And Stephen, firmly on the outside looking in of the NCAA tournament field, which it's considering where the expectations were going into this year, just something that I personally would have never seen unfold.
I really am having trouble believing that this is the reality that, after the Missouri game, I even said, are we using hyperbole to say that they won't make the tournament? Because it did seem at the time maybe an overreaction to just a few bad games or a rough start. Well, I think today, that might have been, even when Sean Smith on this show had said early on, I don't think this is an NCAA tournament team. I was like, he's right now. They don't, the resume right now, but he's going to be right overall. I can't imagine them getting hot and making the tournament now.
It's a really tough reality, a really tough situation. Let's talk a little bit about how it happened. Kind of a spitting image of how things unfolded at Rupp Arena back in January in Kentucky's comeback win against the Georgia Bulldogs, where Oscar Tshiebwe basically single-handedly willed the Wildcats to victory down by eight in the first half, end up coming back, solidify a lead pretty early, and then basically cruise the rest of the way playing Oscar Tshiebwe ball. He goes for a career-high 37 points and 24 rebounds. Looks like prime Shaq in that one, just an unstoppable presence down low, something that Georgia just simply couldn't stop. You get a very similar situation. Kentucky starts out sluggish down in Athens, jump out to a pretty solid deficit, go into the half down 10, allow 42 points to a team that averaged 69.9 going into the year. It just a very average offensive team as is. You let them score 42 in the first half. They're confident. They're, you know, knocking down big shots, tough shots. They're driving at will, kind of beating Kentucky off the dribble and hurting them defensively the way we've seen Kentucky struggle quite a bit defensively as of late. The second half begins and Kentucky kind of slowly starts chipping away at that lead. Oscar Tshiebwe kind of starts ramping things up and you go, all right, we can work with this. We've seen this story unfold before. It's happening in the exact same way. They tie it and then take a 4-point lead with 12 minutes to go, Stephen. And then from that 12-minute mark down to the 1 minute and 21 second mark to close out the game, Kentucky scores 6 whole points.
That's
six points in that stretch, leading Georgia to pull off the next comeback, kind of ramp things up, build their own momentum, and then close out the game, winning 75-68. So they pulled off the brief comeback and then let the wheels fall off there in the second half. Just wasn't able to make a shot. Antonio Reeves got cold. Cason Wallace didn't step up shooting the ball. And Oscar Tshiebwe tried his best to be Superman, but unfortunately the Georgia Bulldogs were his kryptonite there in the second half.
Man, you know, just kind of going through the play-by-play here, like you said, they had that 4-point lead, 52-48. And then Jacob Toppin missed a jumper that kind of rolled off the rim. He missed two that could have pushed that lead to 6. And, you know, he had just hit a couple big shots right before that. He hit the 3, I think, did he hit the 3 that put him up by 4?
Yes.
Okay. So, with 11:54 to go. And, man, I really thought there that I was like, okay, you just needed to get out of there with the win. It didn't need to look pretty. You just needed to win.
And I would have been comfortable with that going into the game, too. Like, I knew
two guys
they weren't going to roll over. Like, they weren't going to roll over and die the way they did at Rupp Arena. So I was kind of expecting a rock fight like that, but, yeah, not in that sense.
The offensive problems are still there. Now the defensive problems have been an issue all year. And you wonder, like, how can teams so easily scout against Kentucky? It seems like every time we hear from a post game from the other coach, he's talking about how easy Kentucky was to scout for. I don't know. Have you heard Calipari or an assistant talk about how easy a team is to scout for this year or ever since you've been covering the team?
No, it's always we're focused on us. Yeah. We're going to deal with our own issues and let everybody else attack us. You know, we're going to handle our own business and everybody else is going to adjust to us. That's been the Cal MO over the years, but hasn't been the case this year.
There's got to be some holes in these other SEC teams that are there to be exploited. Kentucky can't be like the only one, but I feel like I've never heard a press conference from Calipari or an assistant, you know, in a pregame talking about how, you know, we see, you know, we saw what we could do there, and outside of just like we're going to overpower you with our length and, you know, our speed and whatever, and use Oscar down low. Really disappointing performance. I know Calipari said in the post game, no one's going to talk about how we were missing two players. That was a big. How much do you think not having them?
It did. It hurt when you have Xavier Wheeler. So he goes down with an ankle injury. He rolls his ankle in practice on Monday, and then C.J. Frederick, just a couple days before that, he goes down with a freak incident. He goes coast to coast for an and-one against Florida. He kind of crashes to the ground. There's a cameraman there. He hits directly on the cameraman's knee, cracks a rib. He fights through it. He plays against Arkansas. Admittedly, does not look very good. as you would expect somebody playing you with a cracked rib. You're not supposed to look good with that. He tried toughening it out, just what did not work out in his favor. He was later declared out. He's going to, you know, going to be held out with pain tolerance, and he's going to try to fight back before the season ends. But until then, it's just kind of a day-by-day pain tolerance deal. So you're missing your starting point guard and your starting wing, sniper, sharpshooter, you know, in C.J. Frederick. Those two pieces on the surface level, absolutely crucial pieces for just what Kentucky is doing and who their identity is. Xavier, the way things were going today, I think he would have been a nice change of pace. I think he would have helped defensively. I think he would have been that kind of that spark plug that this team needed, especially when they were just nobody could score in the first half outside of Antonio Reeves. Yeah, Antonio went for 15 in the first half. Everybody else, I think, went five for 20 overall in the first half, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
And then in the second half, Antonio goes cold, and then as a result, the rest of the team goes cold outside of Oscar, you know, kind of taking things over there briefly. But Xavier would have been a really nice complimentary piece there. And then obviously C.J. Frederick, you make one or two threes in that stretch, especially, you know, when Jacob puts a team up four. If C.J. comes down the floor and hits down, you know, hits another three, yeah, then, you know, that's game over. The momentum's flipped. You know, your Stegman Arena or Coliseum was waiting for that explosion and waiting for that moment to, you know, flip the momentum back in their favor and then just keep it that way. If you hit a big shot in that moment, you kind of take the wind out of their sails, and they can't get behind the team the way that they're needing, and the way Georgia, admittedly not a very good team, they came in ranked around 160th in the net, or maybe 129, something like that. I'm driving, so I don't have these stats pulled off the top of my head. But they're just not a good team. They're coming in, they lost six out of their last seven.
The
one win was a 3-point overtime win at home against South Carolina, the worst team in the SEC. So they were playing bad basketball going into this. Yeah, they were desperate, but this was a beatable team in an environment that wasn't even a sold out environment. So it's not like it was just this absolutely ruckus, home court advantage in favor of Georgia. They played into that home court advantage there in the second half and just weren't able to capitalize late. But yeah, I definitely think that missing CJ and Xavier hurt, but there's way too much talent on this Kentucky team compared to what Georgia has.
Or we think.
It should not have made the difference. And Terry Roberts, Georgia's leading scorer, arguably their best player, he came in limited and was a game-time decision. He was limited to 22 minutes in this one, too. So injuries happen. Everybody's banged up this time of year. You can't use that as an excuse. This was a must-win game, and even though that was kind of a Calipari crutch there during the postgame, I'm not taking that. This was a must-win game that Kentucky just did not bring the fight. They did not bring the intensity, and they got smacked in the mouth by Georgia. And
you talked about the Georgia fans, and I think that it's a good time to give a shout out to the Kentucky fans who showed up. I mean, this
big blue
team,
go Big Blue Chance.
Go Big Blue Chance inside of a Stegman Coliseum, and for it, the team hasn't been very good this year, but the fans are still showing up, and that's what's really cool, seeing the Kentucky fans on the road. There were quite a few. Maybe a strong Big Blue contingent from Catlanta coming down the hour and a half drive that we also took this morning to get to Athens. But going back to the game, do you think that having those two guys on the floor also just would have made this game maybe a little bit easier for Cason Wallace, because you really needed him and you got basically nothing offensive, like at least from a point scoring standpoint?
0 points up until the final minute of the game for your third leading scorer, a guy who came in and has kind of emerged as Kentucky's star when Oscar Tshiebwe has struggled in various ways, when teams have trapped him and really tried to make him uncomfortable. Cason has kind of been that steady force, and Antonio Reeves has obviously exploded here as of late, and he's playing really solid basketball. And again, he showed that in the first half, 15 points. He closed out with 20, a little bit of an inefficient second half. I think he finished 2 of 10 after the break. As you'd expect somebody to go cold when you get the volume. You can't stay hot forever. So that was to be expected. You needed that extra piece. You needed that one last guy to kind of put Kentucky over the edge, and Kaysen needed to be that guy. 0 points up until the last minute. He scored five in the last like 57 seconds or something like that. It's just not going to cut it when he is as valuable as he is, and it, you know, is kind of that stable presence who is capable of beating you off the dribble and, you know, pull up in the mid-range or dunking on your head or finishing strong in the basket or even, you know, knocking down the occasional three. Like, he can attack you at all three levels, and there were opportunities for, you know, for Georgia to be exposed in that area. They were clearly looking to trap Oscar. They were not going to let a video game number Oscar Tshiebwe beat them in this game. They were going to let anybody else do it. That's why Antonio Reeves was getting whatever shots he wanted early. He kind of settled out a little bit, and you know, it played right into their game plan. And Kaysen would have been that perfect complementary piece. And yeah, maybe having CJ in there or Xavier in there would have helped. But I can't use that as an excuse, man. Like, Kaysen needed to step up in that moment, and unfortunately, it just wasn't his night either.
Yeah, and 0 for 4 from 3. Also, he battled foul trouble, and that also
crucial.
Kept his
everybody
numbers
down. Battled foul trouble.
Yeah, it looks like said. Look at the starters. I mean, three guys with four fouls. And then Damian Collins coming off the bench also had four fouls.
And that led to the biggest kind of storyline of how Georgia was able to put points on the board. And I was at the free throw line. I think they finished 23 of 27.
They got 25 of 29 right
25
here.
Of 29.
That's
so
crazy.
Almost 30 attempts at the free throw line. I think Kentucky gets 13 attempts. Yeah. I mean, that's the difference. This was a team that had knocked down free throws at a very high rate throughout the season, and that was one way that they were going to look to attack it and beat you. Cario Aquindo, that's kind of what he's known for, driving, attacking, a physical, big, beefy guard. That's how he's going to score. He's going to drive on you. He's going to look to finish at the rim, draw contact, draw fouls, and get to the line. That's exactly what he did, and really kind of set the tone for that game. He brought the intensity. He brought the physicality, and Kentucky just did not bring that fight. And Stephen, what did you think of the lack of energy on the bench? I thought we got past that. You know, going back to, you know, the start of SEC play, where that was such an issue, where team chemistry and you know, just body language and energy and those sorts of things, it was such a prominent talking point for all of us, and they kind of seemed to right the ship in that regard. During their six-game SEC winning streak, you could kind of tell the body language was good. They were jumping off the bench, cheering for each other, smiling, laughing, having a good time. You really loved what you saw in Kentucky's winning streak with that especially. And then it just feels like the last week in particular, dating back to that Arkansas game, it just feels like the bench energy just has not been there. The on-court communication hasn't been there, and it's led to, I think, some defensive miscommunications, getting beat back door, things like that. I think all of that ties in together, that the energy is just not there, and they didn't come prepared for that moment.
It is wild sitting next to the bench today compared to the Tennessee game. The Tennessee game, granted, you're playing, you know, a top five team at the time on the road, and you're going to be more up for that game. I get that. And this was a game that I think, you know, if you're a player, you probably think we're going to win this game, and, you know, not that you're looking ahead, but that, you know how good Georgia is. All right. So it was weird watching the guys not talk to each other on the bench. Like, no, usually they're talking. That's how it was in the Missouri game. Everybody looking straight ahead. One time, I think Bruiser Flint came over and was just kind of going at Jacob Toppin, and then, sorry, our light here. We're trying.
Look,
it's been raining the whole time too, and that's driving me nuts.
We are adjusting on the fly, so all of this is icing on the cake.
So Jacob Toppin is getting, you know, and he just kind of looks straight ahead. Cal comes over and he kind of rips him too, and I don't even remember what he did. Maybe he talked back, said something like, didn't die for a ball, and then said something to an assistant coach, and they both jumped him pretty good. And man, there's just no, like, hey, bro, you're good. There's nothing that from your teammate. There's not, like, it's just, and it's like they're isolated. Like, they're getting yelled at. They're feeling this pressure. They're making mistakes in the game. And then there's really not that, like, come on, hey, keep it. We're good. We got this. You know, it's still the first half. But yeah, same thing. Same stuff that we saw in Missouri. Now we're seeing it again in February 11th. So.
And that date in particular is the scariest thing of all of this. February 11th, six games now left in the regular season. You're sitting at 16-9. Your resume is admittedly not good. And you're officially on the outside looking in the NCAA tournament field, talking to John Calipari and Oscar Sheboy after the game. And they're so, you know, they're saying all the right things and saying what you'd expect to hear from a coach that's trying to stay confident and a player trying, you know, the leader of your team trying to stay confident. And, you know, like, what are they supposed to say in that situation? Yep, we're screwed. Have a nice day. This season sucked and I don't, you know, my
we're
fault.
Set the next six games
We'll figure it out. Let's look ahead to DJ Wagner next year. Like, we can't, obviously they're not going to do that. You need to say all the right things, but it's almost this like this false reality that they're kind of instilling on us and everybody that's, you know, listening and paying attention, saying, oh, well, there's plenty more opportunities to come by, you know, plenty more quality wins, quality games to come by. There's a long season left. You know, we have plenty of time to you know, make a splash and make a statement and things like that. Oscar Sheboy was saying, yeah, we're going to be fine. We're going to have a special finish of this year. We just have to show fight. And it's like, yeah.
Oscar, are you living in the same reality that I'm living in?
It's like, that sounds great. Yeah. I get it. But what about this team has given you the optimism and the confidence that...
And what does that mean, just fight?
That they will be able to fight.
They love saying that word, but what does it mean? Because if it means just toughness. I saw a Duthiero show a little bit of toughness today. He didn't play great, but at least he showed some toughness. I don't know, what does fight mean? Does fight mean diving for loose balls? I've seen them do some of that. I don't know. That, like you said, false reality. What? I understand they're not going to say, oh, season's over, but hey, maybe if you talk for longer than 4 minutes and 36 seconds, you can get around to saying some stuff like, look, this is not...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Where we thought we would be. This is not what we had bigger aspirations than this. Regardless, if they go on and win the national title, that's great. Hang a banner and everyone will forget the regular season for the most part. But we'll still be like, man, how did that team lose seven games in the SEC or however many they'll end up losing?
Yeah, I see fight as imposing will and, you know, to bringing the effort. And it was really frustrating because we listened to Jacob Toppin and Antonio Reeves, maybe, the pregame press conference talking about what to expect with Georgia. Yeah, Antonio Reeves and Jacob Toppin, what to expect from Georgia after, you know, knowing how the first game went, how the first matchup went, how were they going to respond? What were they looking for? And they said, we know we're going to go down there into Athens and they're going to try to throw the first punch. We know that they're going to bring the physicality, they're going to bring the effort and the intensity and things like that. So they knew going into it what the mindset would be for the Georgia Bulldogs. And that's what was so frustrating to me, is they took the first punch. Like, why are we now February 11th taking the first punch instead of throwing it? Like, why can we not throw a first punch for a change? And that's what's bothering me quite a bit, because it's like, this team has the pieces to, you know, to throw punches and to be the initiator and to impose its own will, but it just doesn't feel like anybody on this team is willing to do that and willing to go to those extra lengths. And And there's six games left in the regular season. If they haven't gotten that stuff figured out at this point, what would make you think that it's just something's gonna magically click in these last six games, or even in, you know, down in Nashville in the SEC tournament, or God forbid an actual tournament run, you know, once we get to March Madness, assuming they even make the tournament, because as of right now they are not in the field. So.
Well, Jake, I want to ask you this too, because, okay, we talked to Cal in the post game. Somebody asked him, I don't remember who it was, but somebody asked, what happened on that play? You're down three, and basically you get a shot clock violation, but you get Chris Livingston throwing up a step back, fall away three-pointer that didn't have a chance of going in. And he said, oh, well, this somebody did, the person who was supposed to do this didn't do it. And I'm like, it's February 11th. At what point do we take responsibility for our players not knowing where to go and stop saying, these players are stupid. They don't know what they're doing. But don't blame them. But don't blame the players. I don't want to blame, guys, don't blame the players. But they don't know what they're doing. Don't blame them. But they don't know. You see what I'm saying? That stuff is like, dude, it is February 11th. If you're still screaming at your players because they don't know where to go, that's on you. Is it not? Am I wrong? I mean, at what point do we just continue to go, oh, he didn't know where to go. Well, that's a good enough excuse. How about recruit guys who can learn stuff or teach these guys better? How are you failing at this? You've done that. Calipari and this staff have been around college basketball or just basketball in general for how long? How can you fail these kids?
40 years.
How can you failing them if they don't know where to go on February 11th? How complicated is, how complicated are these plays? How complicated is the whole system? So, I mean, like, and I don't think it is, but I don't know. I don't know because we get 4 minutes and 36 seconds.
That sequence, I think, was the story of this team season. I think when you are coming out of a timeout, you get a second chance. It's an offensive rebound opportunity. It goes out of bounds. It's a TV timeout. You get the chance to hit reset and say, all right, you're down by 3 points against a team that you should be beating. Let's put together a play. Let's execute the way we need to execute, and let's get the hell out of here with a win. Let's do what we got to do. And they run the shot clock down, get a step back three from the top of the key from Chris Livingston, who has been shooting well as of late. But
yeah,
is that the guy that you want to tie the game with 3 minutes left?
I'm sure even if they did, they didn't want that kind of shot.
End of shot clock situation, yeah. Fadeaway air ball from the top of the key. Of course not.
No.
It's a miscommunication. The play wasn't executed the way it was needed to be executed. And then Georgia goes down. It ends up being a shot clock violation. Georgia goes on the other end of the floor, gets a corner three-pointer, wide open, knock it down, go up six with 3 minutes left, and that's ball game. I mean, there's... Yeah.
When this team gets down six in the second half,
you should be able to come back down six in 3 minutes, but the momentum at that point had shifted completely out of Kentucky's hands, and, you know, it got to that point where it just is what it is at that point, and that game, that sequence right there was what this season... Like, if you could just kind of put an individual sequence in a big picture scenario of what this season is and how we got to this point, I would go back to that sequence and say the teams going against when the big opportunities have come for Kentucky, they haven't been able to live up on their end of the bargain, while the opposition has always come up in the clutch. They've always hit the big shots. They've always executed down the stretch, and Kentucky just hasn't. And we are six games away from postseason play, and we're still having issues figuring that stuff out. And that doesn't give me, you know, warm, fuzzy feelings that things are going to get figured out. It's a very sobering reality that we could be yet another year extending the streak of zero NCAA tournament wins since 2019.
Gosh. I was going to say, give Calipari a little bit of credit. I will when they switched to a 1-3-1, Calipari called a play. Chris Livingston takes a baseline and dunks. So I just want to, you know, we see it sometimes. But the play you're talking about, it was the season. Not just metaphorically, but like, hey, you needed to win this game. This was
one side executes, the other side doesn't. That's how you get to 9 losses with 6 to go.
So for the last 8 minutes or so that we have left of this podcast, do you want to talk about overtime elite? That was my first time being there. I thought it was really cool.
Absolutely. So, and I guess to tie that in, real briefly, and I'm excited to get your thoughts on this because of what you saw, and there are plenty of takeaways, I'm sure, from your thoughts on Rob Dillingham, seeing him live for the first time. But I think one of the kind of overarching themes of this fan base right now and kind of just the mindset of this team is, well, this season is what it is. You know, chalk this up to, you know, just a lost cause, whatever, let's look ahead to next season. Well, at least we have the number one recruiting class coming back next year. At least we have DJ Wagner. At least we have Rob Dillingham, Aaron Bradshaw, Justin Edwards, Reed Shepard in your, you know, disposal, like, you know, that piece of meat dangling in front of us, just blindly running away from this past season and looking ahead to next. I think that there's kind of a very small portion of this fan base that is looking at that and using that as their optimism moving forward. So I was very excited to see your thoughts, seeing Rob Dillingham for the first time, and understanding why I have used this platform on Sources Say to say, that ain't a smart idea. Yeah. It's okay to be excited about next year, and I do think that by the end of next season, they can put together a pretty darn solid team and could potentially make a run. But it ain't going to be a 40-0, let's cut down the nets before the season even starts type deal, because they will struggle for a myriad of reasons. And I'm excited for you to dive into maybe just a little bit of them after your first time with the Rob Dillingham experience.
So now I've seen every single recruit that's coming in next year. There's a reason to be excited. Absolutely. I mean, there's so much talent that's coming in. It's kind of the rock star kind of group that, you know, at least with this class. Now, you've said before, just because you have the number one class doesn't mean you have, you know, you have a John Wall class. Mm-hmm. This maybe 2023 class maybe isn't all that great, but Dillingham, it's interesting because I really like his game on the ball and dishing. I love his ball handle. I love his crossover. He's got that quick twitch. Like the Cal described it as like being able to really think on his feet, make the right play. Love all of that. Not a big fan of step back 20 footers, guys in his face. And that kid, hey, look, I wish I had his confidence. He misses 8 in a row, and he's like the next one's definitely going in. And when it doesn't, and the next 6 don't, then the next one's going in. I'll give him that. I mean, you know, he's pretty unconscious as far as, like, I'm just going to keep shooting, man. If, you know, people are leaving you open for a reason, Rob. That's all right. I'm letting it fly, baby. Like, let it go. Shoot them all, Rob. But
all vibes team is Rob Dillingham.
Yeah. You know, that. But I think that people need to probably understand, here's what's going to happen. Here's my prediction for next year. You're going to probably lose the Champions Classic game. You'll play Gonzaga at home. That's going to be a tough game. I mean, they're going to have the same early season struggles next year. How patient are fans going to be? Because this is what's gotten a lot of fans through this season is, well, next year, number one class. I saw a country music potential star, J.D. Shelburne, on Twitter talking about this next class, though, that's coming in. And I don't know. A lot of Kentucky fans feel that way. But how much patience do you think Kentucky fans are going to have once that team inevitably struggles in November and December, like every Calipari team has done since 2015?
Yeah, the good news is these type of players, this is when we've seen John Calipari at his best. Mm-hmm. When he has had these type of guys, MFers that are capable of going to get their own shots, that will talk trash to you on their way down the floor after bricking a shot, but then 3 possessions later, drill one in your eye and see, that's why I was talking mess to you a couple plays back. Those type of dudes have always done very well at Kentucky, and that's why I do expect them to be successful at the end of the day. But goodness gracious, if there was ever a team that was going to take some early lumps, it's one that brings in 2 ball dominant guards like DJ Wagner and Rob Dillingham, who I really don't know how you're going to play 1 on ball, 1 off ball, and how that dynamic is going to work, because they do rely on initiating themselves and everything kind of flowing around them. They've never played a style of basketball that didn't kind of have them as the center focus of everything that their offenses were doing, and then playing them alongside Justin Edwards, who is also his own team star up at Imhotep, and you know, Aaron Bradshaw being his own superstar, and it's kind of emerged as his own top 5 talent in high school basketball. There's just a lot of pieces, a lot of different ways to use them that I think will result in some identity issues and some role issues to start with next season. But the Overtime Elite experience was a great one. I had a really, really fun time watching, just kind of, you know, it's like an NBA style, very structured. You get you get the spotlight before the spotlight. And I think that's what's really important for Rob Dillingham, that he is going to get, you know, he's getting acclimated to what life will be like as a Kentucky Wildcat. And I think that's very, very important for any five-star, you know, McDonald's All-American, blue chip type of recruit. So he's in good hands as of right now.
You know, we were talking about this. This is how nice it is at Overtime Elite, that I think usually those kids who come from high school and they go to a place like Kentucky, they kind of look at the facilities and they're just blown away. I don't think Rob Dillingham is going to be blown away by Kentucky's facilities. I think he said he was blown away by the grill.
Overwhelmed, I think. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be overwhelmed by all of it. I think,
like their facilities are, I mean, he's getting top trainers, he's getting the recovery, he's getting doctors, they're getting mental health people, he's getting media training. I mean, that place has got it going on. It's really cool. I mean, if you ever get a chance, if you're in Atlanta on like a Friday night, go check out some of their games, because it's a really neat experience. And I loved the, what was it called, their bonus, can you explain that to me?
Instead of a typical bonus that you see, you know, for end of game free throw situation, things like that, they basically do like a power play that you see with hockey, where you get, five on four situations. You know, they take one guy out to basically initiate a 5-on-4 or a 4-on-3 or, you know, 4-on-4 or whatever. And that's kind of how games end, and that's how halves end and things like that. So it basically tries to maximize getting runouts and transition and learn how to, you know, put these kids in position to make decisions that they will be making in the NBA and the, you know, high profile colleges and things like that. So a lot to like about Overtime Elite. Definitely enjoyed our experience down there. Enjoyed the Rob Dillingham experience. Glad you got to see him with your own two eyes for the first time, and, you know, kind of help temper expectations a little bit about, yeah, a lot to be excited about, but also just kind of reel it in a little bit and know there's going to be some rough patches next season as well. I know we got to get out of here, Steven. Hopefully this drive doesn't take too much longer, but I appreciate everybody tuning in with us for another edition of the Source Today Podcast. Real quick, where can fans find your work?
Twitter, but actually go to YouTube. My Twitter is Steven P. KSR, but go to YouTube and subscribe. Definitely do that before you check out my Twitter.
Find me on Twitter as well, at Jack Pilgrim KSR. Reach out to me via email, jpilgrim@kentuckysportsradio.com. With that, we'll be back next time for the Jam Pack Sources Day Podcast. We will see you then.
And it stopped raining.